especially enough the arguments that we've been putting since 9 o'clock for those that are only coming now. In the morning session, we were engaging with the AG, the FFC, and the DPME. So now we are ready to listen to the department on its annual performance. We had deliberately invited those entities that are normally also audited by the AG, the NHBRC, and the CISOs to come and sit in this meeting. So I'm hoping, I know that NHBRC is here and CISOs is here. So we are going to start and allow the department to present, and as usual, they will tell us who is in their delegation. Welcome, teaching. With your team, we are going to give over to you now. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, Chair and honorable members of the committee. I'm accompanied by my colleagues, the so-called Mr. Double Chief sitting next to me on my right. CFO over there, I'll start with the executive team. Ms. Funanenga Mahlatsi is sitting over there. Behind me, I have Ms. Nevin Swanana, who is also head of corporate services. We also have Ms. Mongo, I've seen her earlier, DDG Mongo is there. And I don't know why she's sitting far away from the fire. We also have other officials over here. Behind me is head of internal audit, Captain Oshwan. We also have Lucy Masilo, who's in charge of our investment division, chief investment division. Mpundo is sitting on our left. She's in charge of the strategic planning component of the department. In fact, she's responsible for performance managing the organization, and she reports directly to SOO. Marius over there, who works with the CFO, right behind me is Joe. Somebody, Joe, is in the office of the team. There are other colleagues who will probably join us later, Chair. But for now, we've got all the managers who will be able to account for you.
Thank you very much, and welcome. Hopefully, you are all ready. I'm tired, but not that tired to engage.
Welcome.
Chair, without wasting time, we will try to be
as structured as possible, and we will stick to the text so that we can manage the time wisely, and we would want the session to be as interactive as possible. So we won't take much of your time with the presentation. We will go straight into it. I'll start with the overview, the structure of the presentation. The overview of the departmental performance will be done by myself. I'll take the first few slides on the overview of the departmental performance. And then we'll ask Nervu Chin, the SOO, to take care of the progress on qualitative outputs. You will also touch on the MTSF sector performance. We'll ask the CFO to take us through the grant expenditure report, which will touch on the provincial performance, the municipal performance. We will look at other financial matters in the presentation. We will also try to respond directly to the matters that were raised by the Auditor General. And that will be the structure of the presentation, Chair. to give you a summary of what we have achieved and also failed to achieve in the last financial year. We had 74 annual targets. Out of those 74 annual targets, we achieved 56 of those targets, and that represents 76% of what we contracted to achieve in the last financial year. We also achieved partial. When we say partial, it means that the target was not completed at the end of the financial year, but it was either 80%, 90%. In some instances, we had drafts, and some policies with draft policies. So this is just to indicate that some targets were partially achieved. What we failed to achieve is 5%, which represents 4 of those targets. And we'll talk about those specifics. Child, we had one big target, and we need to be upfront about this one. Now, this target, the consolidation of the human settlements, development finance, institutions, we started with the last form of government. It's a target that we should have achieved right now. Perhaps we underestimated the nuances, some of the things that we had to do in amalgamating three entities. I'll talk to them just now. The relevant directives have been given and been issued by the minister to the three entities. The only thing that is outstanding is the tax amendment. We should make it possible for those two other entities, the NECHA and RAL, to donate the assets to NHFC. You know, the first line of operational integration is to get these two entities to be amalgamated before we come up with the new legislation for the new DFI. Now, some of them, RALF, NECHA, they have liabilities. They have loans that they have taken up. They have assets, and they need to donate those assets. They need to devolve those liabilities. You know, the public finance principle is that when you amalgamate entities, you take both assets and liabilities. So the receiving entity, in this case, is NHFC. It has to take over all of these assets and liabilities. Some of them cannot be donated. It would mean that NHFC would have to enter into a new arrangement with the funders. One example is the loan that NECHA took from DBSA. That loan cannot be ceded to NHFC. It has to be, you need to negotiate with DBSA to restructure that loan differently, because the terms and conditions were very clear that the loan cannot be ceded to another entity. The policy framework for the creation of the single DFI was developed, allowing for the development of the draft business case and the commencement of the draft deal. The deal has to come to Parliament. But we're done with the framework, the policy framework. We've started with the business case. We will be completing the operational integration before the calendar year. We'll be given marching orders by the minister that the operational integration has to be concluded before the end of the financial year. Chair, these are some of the policies that we reviewed. Now, we're mindful of the fact that there is a white paper process in place. We don't want to do these things piecemeal. The white paper process will make it possible for us to review all of human settlements policies. It will make us to deal with all of these things in a holistic manner. You are aware that, as we speak, we still have the white paper on housing. Now, once we have moved from white paper housing to white paper on human settlements, it will make it possible for us to get started with the Human Settlements Act. As we speak, we still have the Housing Act. So the white paper will inform the Human Settlements Act. It will also inform the Human Settlements Code. If you look at all the programs that were implemented, they're all in the Housing Code. Now we want to move from the Housing Code to the Human Settlements Code. So we have done a beneficiary allocation policy review. We've done the revision of the preemptive clause on the sale of subsidy houses. You'll recall that when we started, when we passed the Housing Act, some of the programs were not in place. One of them is FLISP, the Finance Linked Individual Subsidy Program. Now, some of the banks that are working with us, or private funders, they had a problem with that clause, the preemptive rights clause. But in some instances, it is the funders themselves that are putting more money in subsidizing, so they are putting more money in funding the loans. So it can be that the preemptive rights clause is only talking to us. It has to talk to the banks as well, because they put more money, or funders in general, they're putting more money. So we're reviewing that as well. The evaluation of the social housing program was completed. The review of the housing code has commenced. It has not been concluded because we need to synchronize it with the human settlements white paper. An investment framework to guide human settlements development was completed for consultation. We have put it through the cabinet processes. It has been presented to the DG's cluster. It hasn't gone to cabinet yet. This is simply your master special plan. We don't want to build houses everywhere. We want to make sure that we direct the investments in areas where there is a greatest need, in well-located areas. The biggest criticism against human settlements is that we build houses in the periphery of towns and we make it extremely difficult for the beneficiaries that we're building for to commute to areas of work. So we want to change the approach slightly so that we direct our investments to areas where there's a greatest need for housing, there's economic activities, there are social amenities, socio-economic amenities. So the investment framework is a smarter special plan which will inform investments going forward. Still on the qualitative outputs achieved as at March 2016, we've developed a prototype of the business intelligence dashboard, which is simply going to assist us to track performance by province, track performance and intervene timeously in municipalities. Remember, almost 95% of the grant that we're administering is implemented in provinces and in municipalities. 18 billion rands of that 34 billion rands grant is administered and implemented by provinces. 12 billion rands is administered and implemented by municipalities. All what we need to do is to check out project level monitoring. We need to be on top of all of those projects. The last time I was told that we have plus minus 12,000 projects underwrite because the number changes every year. We need to be on top of all of those projects, especially the top, if you like, your top 80 or your top 60% of those projects, because if they don't perform, it means the sector is not performing. The central intervention to fast track the issuance of title deeds, it has commenced, it's chaired by the COO, the chain. We have provincial reference groups, which are chaired by the AGDs. We started this program very slowly. I need to admit upfront that we spent a lot of time gearing ourselves up, putting structures in place. The good news is that Treasury has allowed us to ring-fence the budget, because most provinces have been using this budget, lack of budget to ring-fencing as an excuse for poor performance. We've ring-fenced the budget. We have created a panel of professionals and conveyancers who will be able to help us to meet that target. But Chair, we are not there yet. The performance has been very slow. This is a priority target, but we do have structures in place. Consumer education program was implemented with provinces in the year under review. We've exceeded the target that we have set for ourselves. But we don't want this to be a quantitative target, Chair. I think it's more about making sure that we have an impact, making an impact. Because when we give an asset to beneficiaries, they need to know that this is an asset which will help them to participate in the financial markets, in the capital markets. Once you have an asset, you can go into the capital markets and raise funds. Raise funds to take kids to school, raise funds to expand your house, raise funds to start your own business. The fact that you have a house, it means now that you can participate in the capital markets or in the financial markets. The program ensured that the NHBRC involved all subsidies, all subsidized projects, and monitored their construction. Now, Chair, every house we build has to be registered with the NHBRC. Every home builder who builds those houses must be registered with the NHBRC. And those home builders, we have not adhered with the requirements. We have not adhered with the standard operating procedure. Most of those have been dealt with. If you look at the NHBRC website, you'll find a long list of home builders who have been taken into task. But Chair, there are areas where we raise concerns, and I'm sure you may be worried about some of the headlines about NU29 and Motherwell, which we dealt with in the last financial year. We've given the chairperson of NHBRC a clear instruction to deal with that matter and report back to Minister. And we will take action where action has to be taken, and we will move with speed in enhancing the confidence of the quality assurance in the sector. The industrial package of support was developed, concluded, and implemented in Nelson Mandela Bay Metro. Chair, that program, that intervention is beginning to yield positive results. We were there last week. Some members of the portfolio committee were there with us. We visited Chetty 1060. We visited Chetty 491, which is a military veterans program. We also visited Eurobeam, Romania, which are our social housing programs. We are of the view that when the three spheres of government put all of their efforts together, we can overcome every challenge in the sector. And I think that's Mandela Bay Metro was beginning to show exactly that. There is no one sphere of government that has all the capacity in the world to deal with the challenges that we're faced with. But if we put all of our capacity together in the three spheres of government, we can overcome most of those challenges. Training support and incubation program for youth and women, that program is being implemented by the department with NHBRC, EAAP, and HDA. Next slide. Implementation guidelines for PHP was tabled for approval. It's still waiting for Minister's signature. This is the guideline that is going to help us to scale up people housing process program. This is an important program, Chair, because it allows people to be involved in the construction of their own houses. It allows people to decide how to manage the program. So we used the Vulindlela development program to improve on the guidelines. We visited that program. If you look at that program, you have women cooperatives there, you have youth cooperatives in that particular program. Material supply for the program is developed on site, which basically tells you that they are managing the costs of the entire value chain. Because if you are involved in material supply, and you're involved in construction, you're involved in beneficiary allocation, it means you can manage the costs. You're looking at 360-degree view of that entire value chain. So we've reviewed our PHP guidelines so that we can roll it out. This is what we call ILIMA, if you like, in human settlement space. ILIMA is when people come together to build houses for themselves or decide which engineers or town planners or professionals that they are going to bring into the program. The strategy for human settlements in mining towns was developed. But Chair, we are of the view that we need to change tact in the mining towns. It can't be that it is the responsibility of government to build houses for mining workers. When the mining companies signed the mining rights, and they signed the social labor plans, the intention was to make sure that to build houses with their own workers, first and foremost, and then they develop surrounding communities. We think that we are the working model. We all think you have the model that we piloted in Maritana Health District. Government cannot be building houses for the mining workers. The mining companies must build houses for the mining workers. So we do have a model. We think that Rural Africa is on the right track in terms of perfecting that model. If you look at Rural Africa's model, it's simple coming up with a model. We should make it possible for the mine workers not only to rent houses, but to own those houses. We can go and visit phase one of that project. It is a fantastic program. And they gone out to the capital market and they raised an amount of about more than 2 billion rands to recapitalize the financial resources business, which makes it possible for the mining company to give bonded houses the mine workers, because if mine workers go to the capital markets and raise bonds or loans for houses, the majority of them will not be able to get those loans because they are highly indebted. But if you look at the Rural Africa model, it simply makes it possible even for the highly indebted mine workers to own houses. So we think that is a workable model which we will present it to the IMC on mining power. The revision of the guidelines for human settlers development, it has commenced. We've got those guidelines which will be workshopped with the provinces. The program in institutional support to allow for accreditation of the housing function was provided to municipalities. Now, we need to look at this one in different ways. Accreditation is up to level 2. All the metros have been accredited up to level 2. When we go to what used to be called level 3, we've changed it to say it's going to be assignment. You are assigned the function, you're not accredited. But what we've done, we've focused our energy on building the capacity of the metros. Because at the end of the day, you don't accredit for the sake of accrediting. You have to make sure that at least the basic capacity is in place. And we think that we can build that capacity by implementing some of the mega projects, which is, if you like, accreditation by doing. In other words, we work with the metros. We satisfy ourselves that there is adequate capacity for them to run with the programs. Because we've seen metros that have asked for accreditation struggling to spend the grant. In fact, when you get to the grant expenditure, you will notice which of the metros that have struggled to spend the grant and that they have struggled to meet the targets. In fact, it's the same metros that have asked for assignment, not just accreditation, because they have been accredited already. But they have been struggling to perform for the last 5 years. Now, we took a decision that we will do away with the capacity building grant, but will allow the metros in their capital grant, the USDG, to use between 3 to 5% of that grant for operational capacity. In other words, they have control now of the capacity themselves, because we give them the grant. And they can take 3% of their time and use it to build their own capacity. Provinces are doing the same. Provinces are allowed to use 5% of the grant to build their own capacity. We refer to it as offset. Next slide. So these are MTSF targets. These are 5-year targets. Just to highlight some of them, 452,583 additional households provided with adequate housing. Perhaps we will show the 5-year target because it's 252,583 of the 500,000 plus. I will give you the exact number now because we need to give you the target, the 5-year target, and not just what has been achieved, because it will come across as if we are cheating. 252,583 additional households, 170,288 additional households upgraded, assessment and analysis of 101 catalytic projects. These are all 5-year targets. They are in the MTSF, in the what we call the outcome aid. In terms of catalytic projects, the target is to assess and implement 50 catalytic projects. We've done the assessment of 101 catalytic projects. Some catalytic projects, about 26 of those, the developers are on site. Yesterday we met as a sector to discuss the remaining number of catalytic projects. We have the view that all those 101 catalytic projects do qualify to be classified as catalytic projects, but we may not implement all of them in the next, in this current year of government. Chair, I promise that the target for 232,583, it is against 503 for 5 years. So it's 563. For 172,288 additional households upgraded, this is the basic services target. We're targeting households, the 5 year target is 750,000. We're managing this target together with COPT, that we were given clear instruction that we need to compare the figures, because the provision of basic services is COPT's responsibility. So outcome 9 and outcome 8, the two help to talk to each other. My colleague last week spent a lot of time with COPT officials trying to compare the notes, because we should be reporting on the same figures. So there's still work in progress on the 170-288, because this is upgrading informal settlements to stage 2, or what we call the UISP phase 2. The UISP has 5 phases. The last phase is the provision of infrastructure. Phase 2 is the provision of basic services. Chair, 126,278 loans were issued by human settlements, DFIs. Three municipalities were assessed for accreditation. 463 feasibilities in informal settlements were completed in various municipalities. And we're reporting what has happened in the year. 12,092 additional affordable rental opportunities were delivered, and you can break them into four different categories. That is 3,480 social housing, and this is against the 27,000 that were targeted. 27,000 is affordable housing, which is made up of social housing and CRU. So to date, we have 3,480. Again, we started very late on this. We had to deal with the institutional issues at SHRA. There is a very good pipeline. I'm sure my colleagues from SHRA are here. There's a very strong pipeline of social housing projects. There are policy issues that we are working on. For instance, the restructuring coming to the quantum is 125,000 as we speak. That quantum has not been repealed since 2008. We have made a recommendation to the Minister for the quantum to be reviewed upwards from 125,000 to 155,000 per unit. We also thought that it's important to review the income bands. As we speak, the income bands are sitting at 7,500, that is your upper limit. Now, we've made a recommendation to the minister that this must be in line with the first income bands. In other words, you will have still your lower income band at 7,500 all the way to the deep market of 1,500. And the upper limit will also be 15,000, which means we will target beneficiaries for social housing from 1,500 up to 15,000 being the upper limit. In terms of CRU, Chair, we've done 2,152. I must say, this is one of the most expensive projects. It's expensive in the sense that the market that we're targeting is also a very problematic market, because the majority of people who stay in our hostels are people who cannot afford it. Doesn't matter how affordable it is, because some of them are unemployed. So when we upgrade hostels, we use community residential unit program, what is called CRU. And we've done 2,152 of those. In terms of the loans, in the year under review, we've done 6,565. And these are NHFC loans. In terms of PHP, People Housing Process Initiatives, we've done 8,498 PHP units. Now, Chair, I'm going to ask my colleague, Neville Chain, to take us through quickly the implementation of the MTSF, and also the performance of our implementing partners, in this case, including provinces and municipalities.
Thanks, Gigi. Chair, honourable members. Chair, what this does is puts into context, as DG indicates, what are some of the targets in relation to what the summary was, but specifically in relation to the MTSF that was adopted by government 2014 at the beginning of this political term, and it gives you the context. So, for example, and I think the important part here is the last column, which is the total delivered from 2014 to March 2016. That's the term of this office. And it basically gives an indication of how well or how badly we've done. Chair, in relation to this, we haven't given the percentages and we can do that. I think that the one issue that we need to indicate is particularly the target that we're not doing so well, and which would have probably been, and we've raised this, is the second target, which is the 750,000 households in informal settlements upgraded. The annual target there is 150,000 households in informal settlements. The progress to date, 2015-16, is that there's 96,271 households in informal settlements upgraded. That was for 15-16, and that gets added to what was done in the previous financial year. So the shortfall, and that shortfall represents where we should be. So the shortfall between where we should be and where we are is 129,700. Chair, now, and if you look at this, particularly in relation to what DPME, who hold us accountable in relation to this, you'll note that on the first target, the households in informal settlements, in affordable housing and subsidized housing, we're on target in relation to that. However, on the issue of the informal settlements, we're not doing well. And I think we've taken certain actions against that, and in the coming months, we will then be able to produce to the portfolio committee what the rectification measures are. And particularly, there's two issues: reprioritization by the metropolitan municipalities and reprioritization by the provinces in relation to those households. The target in relation to the last one, you'll see the 563 individual subsidy units. The shortfall there between where we are and where we should be is 29,000. So that represents what we can say is where we've had full control over that through the provinces. In the one around the 750, we didn't and are not doing well on that. Chair, just on the, and there's a typo there on the 900,000. It should be 900,000. Titled is not 900. Chair, I think we've presented and we are coming back to this portfolio, but I think this represents where we were at in terms of 31st of March. And we indicate that our annual target was 127,000. The progress was that we had done 87,199, and the total. So, Chair, without being too optimistic, we indicated that we're expecting the national department intervention, and we've asked through the DG for some intervention for us to be able to take this. But this just gives a representation of where we were at 31st of March and what some of the targets were in relation to that. The same thing with the new title deeds, and then the affordable housing loans for houses. The 50 catalytic projects implemented, demonstrating spatial and social economic. Chair, we've indicated that the annual target was 10, and we're expecting at the end of this term of office for those 50 to be implemented. So what we're doing is that over the next period, the next 2 years, we will make up that difference. The number of informal settlements assessed, 460, that is the annual target. And that annual target is made up of 2,200. So it's 2,200 divided by 5, and we get that amount. Chair, one of the issues that you'll see is the poor performance of this translates to the poor performance in Program 3. If you go back and you look at what we've done, particularly during this financial year, we've managed to upscale and improve the delivery, particularly on the NAS. So one of the issues that has come up in the AG's report, as well as an issue that's been raised, particularly by DPME, was the under expenditure on Program 3, and it's specifically. So to translate that expenditure into what we're not doing, this is what we are not doing properly. And we can say with certainty that for this financial year there will be a substantial amount. But that's as the end of 31st of March. The 10,000 hectares of well-located land rezoned and released, Chair, this is a target that we managed with the HDA, and we're on target in relation to this. Chair, then what we do is that, and I'm going to go through this, not because I think the portfolio is aware of this. I think the important thing to note, Chair, is that for this financial year, the last column, in terms of the total delivery, the 152,253, we managed to turn the corner in the sense that what we can say is that this is 10,000 more than we did in the 14-15. It's nothing that we're not happy about it. Both DG and Minister and ourselves have indicated that we shouldn't be proud of that, and we must be able to do more. The one issue, Chair, and you'll see that this is what this represents, but it's against the target. If you look at the target, our target was 167, we managed to achieve 152. So it still represents that. The big areas of focus, and I think this is just an overview of what happened last year. The overall total, we missed our target by approximately 9%. The big culprits in relation to that was Gauteng, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and the Northern Cape. And that's the picture. So at a glance, this gives you an indication of what the provinces were able and what was not able to undertake. That's the numerical targets, and I think this is basically for the portfolio in itself, to be able to have a better insight of what the targets were in relation to services, units, what was delivered, what was promised, and where the shortfall was, particularly in relation to the numbers. And it's important to note that those numbers are not just numbers, but they represent households. This slide, Chair, what we've done is that we've indicated, and I think what we give, I think just in terms of political and administrative oversight, what your annual numerical target is and what your expenditure performance. And you'll see your delivery performance was 91% in terms of non-financial, but our expenditure performance was 97%. And basically what we're saying is we've just got to be careful that sometimes expenditure doesn't really mean you're doing well. And I think that goes across the board. So we try to present this that basically says, you'll note that sometimes expenditures, people are doing well in expenditure, but whether it's translating into actual delivery is an issue. Chair, on the issue around audit improvements, and this was a take up that was one of those recurring items which we managed to resolve with the AG, was the audit improvements on the HSS data. So you'll see we've managed, and I think that just in relation to the Eastern Cape, houses in relation to what they had delivered our capture rate was 97%, and then the total, that brought the total down to 98%. Chair, the one thing that we need to indicate is that, you know, because of the time lag between the close of the financial year, the submission, and the deadline for compliance, sometimes the provinces drag their feet, and that's what happened in the case of the Eastern Cape, and that probably reflects itself, or not probably, but will reflect itself in the next financial year. So we don't lose sight actual numbers are. And I think, Chair, the important thing here is that it's important that the data integrity is improving. So notwithstanding that, we're coming back from a lower profile. So you'll see we've managed to be able to turn the corner in relation to data accuracy. It's only the Eastern Cape, and only in relation to the Eastern Cape is it in relation to houses. So all the other provinces, we managed to achieve 100% compliance in relation to the HSS. The comments on the partially achieved targets, Chair, we indicate, as the DG indicated, what those partially achieved targets, and we give some of the reasons why we spoke why those targets were partially achieved, and that's an issue that revolves around compliance. It revolves around poor performance, and one of the things that we can indicate, Chair, is that you will notice, if you go back to the previous reports of the department, that you had this issue where the DG didn't sign off this, the minister didn't sign this off, the portfolio didn't. We don't have any of that. And I think that reflects some level of improvement in relation to some of the governance issues that we have to deal with. We've basically, for purposes of not only the portfolio but also for minister and as well as political principles at a provincial level, we speak about the substantive targets and what the value add is to households. The targets achieved, Chairman, the one issue here was that the biannual report on property trends was not disseminated, and that's around the question of collation of the information and dissemination, and then also the capacity building program in Program 3, where we had to reprioritize that. Chair, then I'll pass.
Thank you very much, DG, Chairperson, and honourable members. I need to indicate to the House that we have closed the year with a budget of 30.5 billion, which also is the amount that we had been audited on. So I think the indication that we would want to put forward here is that just after all the adjustments done or had been done, the department has been left with a budget to run of 30.5 by the year end of 2016 March. And I think the members are quite aware that the departmental budget is comprised of four legs. One would be your operational budget, the capital budget that consists of your subsidies and transfers to households and entities, together with the major capital grant, which is your human settlement development grant and the urban settlement development grant. And that takes part of your 30.5 billion. If I direct members to the last program, which is Program 4, this is where all our grants are sitting. And this is where the transfers get made, including the transfers to our entities. But I think of significance, because we have closed the year, it's the fact that we closed the year by an underspending of 508 million. And within that 508 million, which the AG has also raised issues on it, is the significant amount that could not be spent on different programs. The major part of this 508 million, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, relates to the transfers that could not happen by the end of the financial year, whereby we could not transfer an amount to the Social Housing Regulator Authority, as well as an amount to our HDA. And if you can take me to the next slide, where if I may move to the bigger part of the third slide, if I just go to the second slide, because I'm still within the entity chairperson, that the 41 million that talks to the institutional investment grant, we could not transfer it because the issue had been created. We had some policy issues that needed to be finalized. So draft did not request that money because of those issues. Otherwise, that money would have anyway not been spent by the social housing regulator. In the bigger part where the social housing structures that needed to be developed, which forms part of the structural development grant, only 109 million was requested by SHRAM. So there was a skewness on the in as far as the pipeline project is concerned. But as DJ has indicated, that has since been improved in this financial year, so there's progress. But we couldn't then transfer the 323, and SHRAP could not request it on the basis of the fact that they did not have a credible pipeline project at that point in time. The other amount that could not be transferred to our agency is through the HDA, which is the 71 million, and it also represents an underspending and contributes to the material underspending as dictated by HDA, of course. It's the fact that of that amount, there's two project management amounts that relate to the national upgrading of the informal settlement program, which is our NASP, as well as the project management money that needed to assist and support the projects or project program management, rather, in terms of our catalytic project. So those are the three big amounts that could not be transferred to our entities. So one could look at the fact that the entities could not perform because they did not have that money. Now, if I can ask you to go back to the slide. Thank you. Chair indicated that part of the 30 million forms, or it's the operational budget, which you would notice that is the goods and services, your compensation of employees, as well as the equipment and any other material amount that forms part of the operational budget. So we were running the department with 688 million outside the grant. So if members could mark the 21 million under Program 4, and as we move, you will see that Program 4 now sits with a budget of 29.8 billion, and this is where the transfers are taking place. But I think the separation is such that if you look at the operational budget, this is the only amount that supports the 29.8 billion that goes to our entities and that gets transferred to our provinces and managed by our metros as well, in the form of the Urban Settlement Development Grant. Your administration underspent by 6%, and if you look at the major part of the program that underspent, and it's Program 3. And we accept the fact that Program 3 was also reported by both and was also noticed by even these other stakeholders that this program has been underperforming for the past 2 years. But simply because of the fact that we had three items that contributed to the material underspending of this program. It's the fact that we could not transfer the Youth Brigade money because of the fact that we could not finalize the agreements that we needed to have with our rural department. From the human settlement part of you, we had signed the agreement before the date, but our partner, which is rural development, had not signed. So we could not transfer the money to the rural development. The secondary part of this is the fact that we could not transfer our money to the SODECO, which is the International Relations Department, simply because it was money for the UN credited. We could not transfer it because it didn't actually form part of the prepayment and it's not allowed in terms of PAA. So that formed part of the understanding. But if you look at the major part of it, it's where there was no delivery in terms of the NASP program. But I must indicate, as we moved forward into this program, and this is part of the action plans that we have put in terms of the AG matter, the fact that we have since improved on this program. The program is running very well. We have contractors appointed, but I think at that point in time, we did not have approvals on time because the metros and the department were not coming into terms in terms of approving the agreements in time for us to be able to move and appoint our contractors in relation to the NASP program management in general. But I must indicate here that, as I indicated, the program, which is NASP, and being managed very closely by the department, is giving us a noticeable difference, and we are quite comfortable with the progress that has been provided by the NASP program to date, and municipalities are coming to the party to date. So now, if one looks at that, we only have 90% of the underspending, rather of the spending in terms of our operational budget. I did speak of the transfers, but the major transfers relate to your HSDG as well as your Urban Settlement Development Grant, which takes almost 93% of the budget to this effect, which was your 28.8 billion that would have gone to our provinces and metros respectively, and the 100 million, which formed part of the municipal human settlement capacity grant, that had ended by the 31st March 2016, as it was transferred as is to our metros. And the entities, as I indicated, only three entities could not meet the target in terms of requesting the additional money or the money as per allocation. And then most of the money was spent under our departmental transfers, which forms part of your UN Habitat, the obligation that we have in terms of our international standards. The next slide, Chair, talks to the major part of the grant, which forms part of the human settlement development. But if one looks at this slide, we indicate that there's much progress in as far as expenditure is concerned. And 97% has been spent on this amount. And if one looks at this amount, it's only two provinces that could not provide us with the intention of the top structures that we expected in this financial year. The major part is the fact that how the money was taken away from the province and redirected to other provinces, who at the time of receiving the money spent their allocation and additional fees to the tune of 100%. The major part is in Popo, but I must indicate, Chair, that for this financial year, there's big progress and slight improvement in terms of projects in the Popo, and there's visibility on the site as well. The other slide talks to those milestones that do not yield new opportunities, but had a budget of 2 billion on it. You can move to the next slide, Neville. Whereby you will notice that it will be only your EDPS certification as well as the issues of the land that has been acquired. But in essence, there is money that has been expended to that. And I think what is significant to indicate to the House here is that while we may have units that are indicated under delivery documents, they slightly form part of the targets that the COO had indicated earlier on. And the issues of the non-correlation of the expenditure against the performance of the department. The next slides talk to the outputs relating to the upgrading of informal settlement in our mining terms. Some provinces did not do well in terms of the mining terms. We can slightly indicate that your Free State, your Mpumalanga, Northern Cape, and Northwest did a fair, or did provide us with a fair material of units within the limits of the budget that has been set aside for the mining terms, but we did not get anything from Gauteng, and most part of the money is the money that was taken away from the Gauteng, and we could not get any sense of whether mining terms at that point in time were achieved, and there was no indication from the province itself. But when we pick up from the other provinces, there was an improvement in as far as the program is concerned, so one could just as well be saying that out of the amount that has been indicated to mining terms, 1.3 billion has been expended to that effect. As far as this is concerned, we do accept that at that point in time, it was only few provinces that implemented this, and only few could talk to the figures that one could see them as improving in terms of the program is concerned. We had a bit of good this program being running at the Eastern Cape, as well as your holding in some of the other matters. But I think when we look at the budget that has been expended against what was allocated, it is more. So if one looks at the transfers that have been indicated to this program, it was even more than what the provinces could indicate. But in other provinces, although they had budgeted, there was nothing to show, indicating that the program is not running fairly as one could have desired. Then the issue of the rectification, we spoke about it at length, and in most of the forums that we had presented to the portfolio committee. And I think what we were concerned about and what we had looked on is the fact that while we get units, there was some differences in terms of the cost per unit that has been utilized or being used by different provinces. And while you had your Free State that did not budget, they had 370 units that were rectified to the tune of 108 million. So they had to take money away from other programs in compromising them for rectification. But we did get a fair improvement in as far as Northwest is concerned to the the value of 880, and your KZN was the most out of the Eastern Cape. That has given us the rectification program. The operational budget is the standard, but the main concern that we had raised was in relation to the Northern Cape, that they had overspent of the 5% that is allocated to them. And I think this was also taken to task between the department as well as the Northern Cape, as well as the amount that were not supposed to be utilized on this program, which related to the assessment of the asbestos at that point in time. While we had other inputs in as far as the disaster relief grant is concerned, which is the money that comes from our disaster management fund, we had varying expenses in as far as the output is concerned. It is expected, Chair, that you would not have targeted the units at the beginning. But just to put the money aside from this, because it came from the, it was an earmark fund from DMU. But what we are indicating here that there is a little bit of a progress in as far as those disasters that have been attended to by the province in different areas. And the marking point is when you look at your KZN with the 1.9 units that have been attended to by province as far as the program is concerned. The UNDG did not do fail, or rather one could just indicate that will be the next slide now, in as far as the year end of the national department is concerned. At the time of us closing the books, the province or the metro had spent 56% of the allocation. But at that time, I think it's very much important for us to indicate that we had dealt with the assessment of the USDG at that point. But before we could even close the book, there was an element of three provinces, or three metros rather, that could not spend to the desired level, which is your Ekurhuleni, the city of Cape Town, as well as Echeveni. And I think at that time, robustly so, we engaged with them to give us a strategy in terms of the recovery plan, which only Echeveni's one showed an improvement in as far as the strategy that had been indicated at what in time. And Echeveni, as we looked at the outer expenditure outside what we are seeing now, has improved significantly. The city of Cape Town and city of Ekurhuleni, we could not transfer because of the issues that we could not meet the desired times in terms of the division of revenue. So we could not even transfer the money or rather redirect the fund to the COG as indicated in our letter, and the fact that we wanted money to be utilized within the province of the Western Cape in terms of purchasing of the land, as well as running the projects within the province and the metro concurrently. That could not happen. And as we would go back and we did indicate to the House that those monies could not be spent by the city of Cape Town as we had predicted them, and the city of Ekurhuleni could not spend. So they did close the books with the amount that we projected not would have been spent by the two metros. If one looks at the next slide, it would indicate that most of the money that we look at in terms of the UNDG would go to the six big items in as far as human settlement development is concerned. Much money was spent on housing as well as water and sanitation. And this is where we would have wanted our grant to be directed to. But obviously, Chair, it varies in terms of the metros. This is just a combined slide for all the metros, if one looks at it. But at that time, we're still touching the 56. So a different scenario is shown as at date 1, 30 June, as we would be presenting, or had presented as a matter of fact, to the committee. But the improvement to that only relates to 86 metros in exception of city of Cape Town and Ekurhuleni. The capacity grant did not perform very or at the desired level. And even though we had closed the books and the grant, it being at the end of it being received by the department, there's lots of money that could not be spent by the end of the metros financially. And even at the time of our closure of the financial year, we were still at 16%, Chairperson. That's a very depressing figure for one who can talk to. But these are funds that also come from the previous financial year of 2015 as well over. And they could not even be spent by the time we closed the book. And even if we can show the current status of the capacity grant, it does not give a positive statement. Say this grant has been used for the desired petrol that it was intended for. So we don't have a price to Kentop Beach capacity grant in as far as the metro is concerned. One of the things that one looks at is the issues of that have been raised in the books of the AG, which is the audit outcomes. Chair, and I think it's very much important for us to indicate that while we had an unqualified audit opinion, we had a very big major matter of emphasis, which is the issue of the material underspending of the vote. And as I indicated, that 38.1 million that the AG had raised, it is informed by a number of items. And I did mention the youth brigade, the NAS, as well as the money that could not be transferred back to DECO. But if you look at it, it forms part of the perpetuating under performance of the program from the previous financial year. But what we could indicate, Chairperson, here is that the NAS program, and when one looks at it from the previous financial year, we had the same problem of material underspending under program 3, where one could just as well indicate that the issues that we had that made the program not to run, we have since appointed Chairperson, the program and project and program manager that reports to the DDG, PMU, and that has been done in this financial year. We have appointed our as and when contractors that are looking at the project and the program itself, and we are talking an expenditure of just about 56% in this quarter, as we have in the half year 10, in as far as the program. So the program has since improved with all the measures that have been put in place. So we have actually developed a performance system in as far as the program is concerned. And there is work in progress relative to the last program. But I must indicate that we were also dealing with the issue of the invoices that we could not receive at that time because contractors or even the service providers were not providing us with contract with invoices on time for us to process them and to realize the expenditure. But I must indicate that with all the funds that have been committed, we will be seeing a difference in as far as NAS is concerned. And I think if one looks at the material underspending in this financial year, our utmost intention is not to have this perpetuating material underspending and a matter of emphasis because it could lead to a qualification as well. The one in issue of the material misstatement, Chairperson, I think we take a responsibility of this one because it forms part of the leadership that the AG had identified as weak in as far as looking at the annual financial statements and the annual report is concerned. And I think the issue of the predetermined objectives were also form part of the material misstatement. But we have since corrected that in our annual financial statement, and hence we had to come up with an unqualified audit opinion. But I think if one looks at all these material misstatements, and as we were closely assessing and analyzing the reason why we had so many material misstatements in the financial statement, it was merely an issue of one could just as well see, but tainting mistakes because they do have an impact. So the improved standard operating procedures in the department would result in us not having these material misstatements repeated again. But I must indicate that we are engaging with the internal audit, departmentally so. We have increased the scope, we have agreed with the internal audit head that we have increased the scope of the internal audit for them to look closely into the financial statements of the department long before even the AG could look at it. So the system of quarterly reporting or quarterly financial statements that has been developed, the internal audit would look at it from the disclosure element point of view. Because one of the things that was also found to be wanting on is the issue of the disclosure notes that were not up to the desired standard. Hence the fact that financial statements were not prepared in accordance with the prescribed reporting framework. So if one looks at the way AG looks at this thing, we would be channeled to say we did not report according to Section 4D1B of the PFLA because of those material statements that we had to correct. The last issue, Chair, and the last two pages I will leave it to the COO is the issue of the contractual obligations, which is a problem with the department, the 30 days payment. The analysis that we've indicated and the strategy that we've put is the fact that we do not have consequence management in this country. As we were analyzing, we find that some of the mistakes are petty mistakes, people keeping invoices in their debt, not realizing that the time of the invoice has gone past. Then we will accept the fact that we do have invoices that have disputes that we have to deal with from a legal point of view. So those are put aside, and it is understandable between ourselves and AG that we cannot pay the invoices that have disputes. But the invoices that do not have disputes, invoices that are undermined by the officials, are related to the fact that we will implement and apply the consequence management to the officials who took the standard procedures for granted. So we realize that we cannot deal with financial management and financial managers and financial accountants who are irresponsible and keep the invoices without paying them within the day-to-day. So we've implemented a consequence management, but I think the register is very much important to indicate, to say we will track each and every invoice that is coming into the department and the tracking system, which is there, but when you look at it, sometimes it's just the fault of our officials who are not taking the system seriously. So, Chair, if with your permission, the last two statements are related to the CEO, which is two slides.
Thank you, Chair. First, before we move to the last two slides, it's proper to break down the 38 million rands under expenditure of program 3. The 20 million rands was earmarked for the United Nations Habitat Program, which has to go to DECO. And 11 million rands was managed for NASA under expenditure, and about 7 million was meant to be dispersed to NHBRC for the youth program. So I just wanted to hear from us what constitutes the 88 million rands figure. Thank you.
Thanks, TG. Thanks, Sipo. Chair, just in relation to some of the measures that the DG has put in place as accounting officer to address the outcome, audit outcome, I think CFO has raised the issue around, but in a discussion and I think agreement with the AG, we have got an audit action plan, and I think if we've got copies of that if you want. But these are just some of the issues that we've raised with the AG and which we've agreed. In order to address the issue of misstatements of the performance information submitted, we agree that management will effect the corrections and review and conduct internal verification process. If you look at the management report that the AG did submit, they did speak to a fact that, and I think as the CFO said, some of the things are human error, they oversight, they're petty. But I think the issue is that particularly as senior management, we've just got to make sure that accuracy and content quality is improved. So that's the issue around the review and the conducting. And then also the department through the CFO is also reviewing the processes and procedures to improve quality and content in the preparation of the submission of financial statements. And we've agreed that it will be done on a quarterly basis. Where it wasn't been done on a quarterly basis, because if it's done on a quarterly basis, it allows for those corrections to be carried. And the last financial, in the fourth quarter, it becomes quite easy because it's basically a consolidation of your first, second, and third quarter. Then the CFO has indicated the corrective measures in relation to the 30-day turnaround process. The material underspending, particularly the one which was within was the National Upgrading Support Program. And Chair, we've indicated that in relation to SCM planning, particularly of the project. Chair, I think it's also important to note, and we haven't raised this and we're not, because it's an issue that we're dealing with, is the technical and operational capacity for program and project planning is being improved by ensuring organizational structure is aligned to the strategic focus area. Because that was one of the issues, that some of the, within the department, you find that in your core business of program and project management, there's huge shortages of capacity. But in some areas which add actually, not that they don't add value, but we give credence to those areas of compliance and a whole range of things, which sometimes represents a skewed ability for us to do that. Then the department through its strategic alignment process, and that speaks those on that slide. The first two speak to each other. One of the things that we've indicated, Chair, particularly, and I think one of the issues that the AG raised with us, DG, and is that they said they went in and they looked at our supply chain and they really couldn't find anything and they found it very hard to believe. But I think the issue was that notwithstanding that we've got a very credible and a supply chain management policy that is integrity, is based on integrity, the issues are on the value for money and efficiencies, and not within the department, but within the provinces and the metros. And you'll see it comes up in relation to the capacity grant, the USDG, and that. Then the overall improvement in monitoring, evaluation, and enforcement of policy and program. Which I know that we've come up with a qualified audit, and we've got three matters of emphasis. I think the issue is that there's still a substantial amount of issues that needs to be dealt with, particularly around compliance. Just the last point on this slide, Chair, I think the point is around between National Treasury to improve the operational and grant funding frameworks. But the last point, Chair, is a series of governance, compliance, and administrative frameworks and monitoring tools have been implemented in process or improved, and this includes the management performance assessment tool, because we didn't do well. We went to the awards last year, and I think, DG, we didn't get any awards. But the best performing department here is what, DTI, and I think it's environmental affairs, are quite good. And we didn't feel good about it. And I came back and the DG says, well, what are you guys going to do about this? I can tell you something. Between the period of the release of this by DPME, the DGs issued three letters of warning to senior managers around the issues around governance, compliance. Chair, just to note, and the entities will indicate, we've extended the impact to the entities. So you'll be able to ask them, and we've extended that to them. Then there's the audit action plan, the stakeholder compacts in relation to the entities, the SCM review, which is in process, particularly around provinces and municipalities, the project readiness matrix, and then the responsive planning implementation and a progressive grant framework, which speaks to some of the issues that both Treasury and DPME have raised with ourselves, particularly in relation to the way that we manage the grant frameworks. Thanks to you.
Thank you, Chair. That concludes our presentation. We want to stress the point, Chair, that the organization is on sound equal footing. The finances of the organization are experiencing a lot of constraints. I must say we've lost a significant amount on our capital budget. We're not complaining, Chair. We're not the only department that has received budget cuts. But we all agree that we still on the right track in terms of achieving those targets. We strive to achieve clean audit, non-qualified audit without any mud. I think that's doable. Those three areas of emphasis are areas that the AG and ourselves, the senior managers, have discussed quite extensively. We all agree that an unqualified audit without any area of is doable, and we will be able to achieve that in the next financial year. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, DJ and your team. I must say, Sharon and whoever has been sitting here, you did a good job of passing the information back to the department to prepare them for this presentation. I'm very impressed.
because almost all the areas that you would have asked, you've told them what to prepare for. But no, we are not complaining. even the action plan that Honorable Chauke would have asked, you have been told that they are available if you want, Honorable Chauke. But anyway, I'm opening for comments and questions. Let me start with Honorable Ngakatsabashe, Honorable Stole, Honorable Makause. Let me start there.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks to the department for the elaborated presentation. As the chair has indicated, but nevertheless, we are still going to raise this issue. Let me firstly appreciate that the department has spent and missed the target, or almost missed the target on problem four, and the good improvement, and is being noted by the AG, and noted by the performance monitoring and evaluation, and is noted by the FFC. But having said that, I still have a problem with problem three, that for three conservative financial years, the department is failing to spend to meet the target of problem three. And we're not hearing what are the actions taken on that management that was responsible for COVID. We can't have this and discuss this every financial year. It takes us back to the provision of sanitation programs. And we had good reasons there that we are not in an engineering department. We are not an engineering design, we have an engineering department. We use for relying on consultants. Can the president take the function where it belongs? Thanks to the president for action that. But now, with this program three, we are doing the same. Because we are tarnishing the name of the department in terms of meeting target and spending if we are not cleaning up the program three on our votes. On our budget goals. Next time we want to get, not about, we hear that the DG has sent a strong letter and blah, 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 but we want action taken. We can't keep on having the same management that is not performing. The second point that's, because that also talks to the deliverer, because that problem three is a support to our deliverer. It's a support to the eradication of informal settlements. And the settlement, the informal settlements that we are not being able to meet the target is the one that creates all the protests and if you call it the unrest that is happening around the country in these cities. It means if we are not resolving that, then we are not supporting enough those metros and other big cities. And for me, it says when the president gives a address the nation during Sona and announced that human settlement is going to deal with its target on the upgrading of informal settlements, so much number, and you don't realize that on three financial years, what are we saying for the SONA? What about are we saying? What about are we saying about the government promising people that their lives are going to be better during the 5-year term in office? Because already for 3 years, if you are left with 2 years, what are you going to do within the 2 years? You are not going to be able even to implement the over 50% of the target. It means we'll be with the support of the. But also in relation to that, in the morning when we met with all these three state organs and the commission, is that we on the informal settlement as well. If as a national department you are not going there physically and assist those measures, you are not going to achieve what you want to achieve. If it's just about transferring money and you don't follow, money must follow function, but also we must also monitor what the money is, the spending of the money. If we don't do that, this is the negative outcome at the end of the financial aid of the policy. And Chairperson, also what has been picked up by the AG, I want to zoom in on the day-to-day payment. I can hear, as the Chairperson said, that they became imperfect. I can hear the response and the explanation, but this is not acceptable. That you are not telling us what are the sanctions imposed on the official, that the CFO said to us a few minutes ago, that they are deliberately ignoring the processes that are part of the legislation, that are part of the PMFFA process, that are part of the tender. Instead of process in relation to NHPRC, where some of the service provider don't provide quotation, some of the money was spent without three quotations, but also not following the proper tender process. This is about the PFMA. PFMA is below, it's an act. Why is it being followed and why people are not being subpoenaed? Why people punished because of that. That says to us, we're not listening to the sonar as well. Because week 2015, 2016 sonar talked about payments of contractors within 30 days. And if they are just the officials that don't take that serious, if you don't take that, the head of the state, who else are you going to take that? Don't take your DG seriously, don't take seriously your minister, and then you don't take seriously your head of the state. Who then are you going to take seriously? You don't take seriously us as members of the parliament. We campaign, we promise people during our manifesto that the economic situation of the country is going to improve, because we are going to create the jobs through these contractors that you are supposed to pay within 30 days. If you don't pay, those sort of, they are out of the job themselves and the business people together with their employees, and then they will have to start afresh. And it's very difficult to start afresh. The banks are on them, they are in debt, they are in red books all over. You have just collapsed, they lose their houses, they lose their property, they lose their vehicles, they lose their business. You have just collapsed. Contributing on collapsing the economy of the country, and really this thing of not paying for no good reason hurts us all. On that one, we're playing with the lives of our people, hurts us all. We can't just work for so many years that are not listening to the rest of the speech. The core concern which was raised by the TPME as part of the Adam item that I mentioned, strategic management, which is a basic and a core content to have an ability to deliver. And I'm aware that DG is a new, not very new, but not very new DG, who has been in house. So DG, please make sure that your strategic team is up to speed. Because if they are not up to speed, they cannot then monitor the management that is below them, up to the management then, who are the implementers of these programs, of these goals, of implementing this, spending this work in provinces and metros and other municipalities. we follow that on quarterly basis. You know, most of the things that are issues that were raised by the FFC and the AG and the PPMP are not new to us. Are issues that have been interacted with you on quarterly basis. But this thing of monitoring quarterly, it doesn't work on some other areas that are critical. This action plan, we want them to be monitored on monthly basis. Someone must monitor on monthly basis whether these action plans are being actioned. Because there might be action plans on paper, but they are not being actioned at all. Monitor it, because if you monitor the end of the quarter, it doesn't work. Monitor it on monthly basis and report back to us. But that's the final check on the action plan. It brings your internal audit within the state, within the government. There should be an internal audit a department. That internal audit department must audit you on monthly basis to make sure that all the statements that you have to financial statements that you have to submit are accurate, are correct before they get submitted to the Treasury and to the agency, so that we don't keep on repeating the same mistakes that have been made. The AG has an opinion on them. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable. Action plans must be actioned by the actions. Honorable Stone.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, we must thank the presentation and the department. Mine, Chairperson, first one is that on this document, page 34. Informal settlement capacity building programs. It shows that you are going to now, actually you failed to implement what you were targeted. Now you are going to do, you are going to reprioritize the target. Are you going to have a new strategy for that reprioritization of that target? Because you were targeting 10 programs in 10 municipalities. And then another one is on page 40, Chairperson. Numbers of informal settlements with settlement upgrading plans per year is 148, but your target was 400, but the actual is 76 informal settlements. It's actually 324 informal settlements, which will you fail to complete. What is your intake on that one, Chairperson? And the other one is that one on the municipalities. You say 463 feasibility informal settlements were completed in various municipalities. But if you say various municipalities, it doesn't say nothing, because you have to tell us per municipality. Per municipalities and per province. And the other one, Chairperson, is that the rectifications, we was in Durban, doing oversight in Durban. It says the department has stopped them to do any rectification. That's why they attacked the chairperson about that. So what is your intake on that one? Because if they say, you say they mustn't do any rectifications, but it shows that there's a lot of rectification that's supposed to be done in Durban. The other one, Chairperson, when you check your annual report, there's nothing to talk about the backyard dwellings. There's nothing. There's no even attempt to formulate the policy about that. And the last one, Chairperson, is that one of CRU. I'm very concerned, Chairperson, because even the your report says it is very expensive. Which is the truth. But what mechanism that we are using to ensure that you communicate with those people who are doing it? Because we cannot say they are all unemployed. No, it's not. Some are are employed. We're supposed to have a system. Either we can help you to help to get some money from them. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Stella. Honorable Macalester.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by appreciating the presentation by the department. My first question will be on the CRU. Chair, when we were doing oversight in KwaZulu-Natal, we visited one project on the way to KwaMashu. It was a hostel project in Cleveland. It's a beautiful project, but when we look at it, the issue of accessibility to persons with disabilities and elderly people remains a concern. Perhaps you might share light with us as to what are the requirements of for you to have a cottage in such arrangements. Do you intentionally exclude such category of people, or was it an oversight? Chairperson, the issue of title deeds remains a concern throughout, and it seems as if this problem is escalating. Is the department somehow putting much more effort in dealing with this issue? The mining housing is also an issue. What is your effort with regards to the issue? Are you somehow putting the pressure on the mining houses to provide decent housing for their employees, or have you left it to the political principals to deal with this? Because it comes back to you to say housing is not provided for miners in South Africa. You spoke about the overspending in the Northern Cape province under rectification. Just share with us the clarity on what led to that overspending. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Macalester. Can I see indication of other things that I must do? Point? Okay. Honorable Bada.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. My first one is around the catalytic project. I heard the deputy DG.
Who's the deputy DG?
Who's Nevin?
COO.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Don't you stay here. Yeah. No, it's fine. It's fine, but my question still remains. My first question, and if you're trying to intimidate me, I'm not going to get intimidated easily. My first question is around the catalytic project, Chairperson. I heard Neville saying, let me start with the DG. I heard the DG saying 50 projects. What did I write here? I said 50 projects. They are already on the ground. It's like 50 projects have been identified with regards to the catalytic project. And then I also had Neville speaking about it to say something like, what did she say about the catalytic project? But there was something that was contradicting, as far as I'm concerned, to what the DG said and what Neville was saying with regards to the catalytic project. And my question is, it's almost 2 years now. I remember the very first speech by the minister where she committed in that financial year that 50 catalytic projects were identified, and those catalytic projects will assist the department to ensure that produces 1.5 million housing opportunities. And now we've been waiting for the catalytic project. I remember at some point the minister was going to make the announcement, and that announcement did not take place. And I remember asking Neville the question again around the catalytic project. I think as a portfolio committee, we need to know what is happening with the catalytic project. When is this thing going to move? Because it is clear it is stuck somewhere and it's not moving. So we need to know as a, in fact, at some point, Mr. Mulo, he came here and I asked him a question to say, the minister made a commitment to say those 50 projects were identified, and then Mr. Mulo said, and I don't want to talk with, about somebody when he's not here. But according to him, it was the oversight from the minister, because that time minister said, I remember very well, the catalytic project, 50 of them were identified. So what is the problem? Where is it stuck? And then in terms of, I want to agree with Honorable Gabashe. Normally I don't agree with her, but today I don't. With regards to the issue of informal settlement. I'm telling you, if we are not serious with the upgrade of informal settlement, remember, the department don't have the capacity to give everybody a house. But I think what we need to do as the department, what the department needs to do, is to make sure that at least we improve the conditions of people living in the informal settlement. And it's very disturbing to notice that the department is not doing well there. Remember that informal settlement upgrade is 50% of the target by the minister. So I think we need to know as a portfolio what exactly is the department doing to correct that situation. Where's the problem? We need to know. Maybe we can assist you. Where is the problem? I'm not going to talk on the issue of title deeds, because I think we've been overemphasizing the issue of title deeds. And again, I think what is lacking from the department is the action plan in terms of those title deeds that the department is not doing well. The underspend by SRA and HDA, and they have to be focused on HDA. I think what sometimes does, or maybe let me give the benefit of doubt to say HDA will come and give us the presentation, but I would have expected the department to give us what is the target, how many hectares of land must HDA acquire, and the shortfall. Because I cannot understand, I mean, with the serious implication or the challenge that the metros, in fact, the provinces are facing with regards to the lack of land. And then we have the department that has been assigned to do that, and yet they are not doing, they are not performing. So I really want to know, and perhaps if HDA, they also want to be assisted, maybe the lack of capacity there. And also, the last one, Chairperson. They understand by the city of Cape Town. Chairperson, we call the other provinces or metros to come and explain to you what is the problem. And I remember whether the DG at some point said that the money was redirected to provincial government. And yet I hear the CFO saying the money could not be transferred. I don't know whether maybe there's something I did not understand there. Because the question I was going to ask, to say if the money was not transferred, where is this money? Especially with regard to the city of Cape Town, because if they did not spend that money, and now come the next financial year, it's almost double the money that has been allocated to them. And then the last one, Chairperson, is coming to the capacity grant. DG, I heard you saying you are building the capacity with regard to this metro. But at the same time, you are also taking the capacity grant that was meant to capacitate these metros. and they have, and also you said that you have structured it with the way that the provinces are working to say you must use your SHDG. The question I want to ask you is, what did you do? Where is that money that was meant for the metro to capacitate them? What is the department doing with that money? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think Honorable Nganga Dabasha has done a lot of good work for us, but I think for the purpose is of ensuring that the department understand that we are one in terms of issues. We must put some emphasis on these points. But we need to start by appreciating the good work by the department. We should also note the fact that at one point, you were led by a lot of acting somebody, to a point where we really had to make some noise about it. But in spite of that, you still have managed to have an unqualified report. I think we must also appreciate the three top guys here, the DG, the COO, the CFO, and the rest of the team, because we know that this is a teamwork. So we appreciate it, because it also says that we are doing a lot of work by Tang Nation, do a bit. So because if we are not doing it, you may not get what you are getting. So thank you very much for this good work. Tell everybody that you are noticing it, but we unfortunately also notice that you are not only stubborn, but you not really are quick, you are slow learners. Because how come that year in, year out, the auditor general repeat same matter of emphasis? But in spite of your degrees, you don't understand what the AG. Now, we have a duty to ensure that, please take care. We don't want to hear again that same matter of emphasis is repeated. You look good. You promising when I look at your faces. You should really... You can't be told one thing every day. No. So your kids, what will they say about this thing? Every day, mama, every day, dada, you're not learning. Please assist us. Because the auditor general stopped short of also saying to us, as people who are doing oversight on you, we may also be not doing a good shambokey. So that's why I thought I must do it, Chair, in spite of the fact that my colleagues made this point, repeated points. I think the important point, DG, is there should be consequences for poor performance. People cannot be paid highly, because I'm told you are paid highly. You see, from senior management to bottom management, you know, those three levels, that's where money goes, you see. So please, there should be consequences for poor performance, not just warnings, a friendly letter, warnings. Poor performance, people must, the head must roll. I think I agree with Nganga Dabasha that the worst is when you ignore your own internal audit committee reports. We now know that you ignore them. You say they must do your work monthly and quarterly, but you ignore them. We now know. I think the chair must be our friend, must come to us all the time. You ignore them. I think it must now stop. When they tell you must implement it correctly there and there. I think there are things that are embarrassing, I must say. There are things that are embarrassing. You know, when you have employees that are running a business with yourselves without even declaring it, and you think you must give warnings, that person must go. It's too arrogant, that person. Not only stubborn, too arrogant. How do you run a business with the same department while you must give these services to other people? I think some of these things we cannot justify. They are not helping us. So we don't want to think they are connected. They must go. So I think we must be given a report of some of these things. There are things that I think indeed must not happen. You know, you hear cars, you now rent others. But you have cars in the same, so I think avoid some of these. They are embarrassing, they are too expensive, they are too petty. So some of the irregular expenses, they must not happen. But the last point I think Shea must talk, the flips, I always feel that the middle class, we not really assisting them. Almost all the provinces are not showing the good report. You know, the middle class is made up of all these poor teachers, all these poor police, all these poor nurses, all these officials in our department. So why are we not helping them? So do we really want them to do what the universities are doing? You see, when learned people are now doing destructive things, you know, learned people destroying their own buildings, we don't want the middle class to, you know, the toilet by police, nurses, and everybody would be a bad to do it. So it's better when it is limited to the informal segment. Please don't invite it. Assist the police, assist the middle class. So we think you're not moving. It's the same as that. You can do better. You can do better in this area. Please move. We think you can move, but we do appreciate, but we think you are allowing people to commit murder. It's the same. Everybody has talked about the invoices not processed deliberately because this official wants that contractor to come to him first. It's usually him. There are a few ladies who do this. Usually him who say, no, the contractor must first meet him. Whether to do what, I don't know. The CEO must tell us. Why are they not paying them? So move with them. So deal with them. So I think, but generally speaking, the department, you must know you are doing a good job. This small thing, these few people that you are acting on them. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. Honorable Khan.
Thank you very much, Chair. And thanks for the report. My colleagues have covered quite a lot, but I just need to make a few points. And I think the first slide, TG, that you presented was on the areas that you achieved and the one that you did not achieve. Of interest, and this is how I sum up the annual report, is that what was achieved is what people can see. That's how I sum up the annual report. What people can see and feel, that's the provision of houses, the fleece, the title deeds, the informal settlements, the social housing, those key areas. I mean, we're dealing with the Department of Human Settlements. So the aspect of settling our people, that's the aspect that we have not achieved. Not one of these, this is what I would call the five key areas that our people out there are judging us on. You know, yes, writing a policy is good, attending the committee meetings is good and so forth. But on those five key ones, we seem to be lacking. And the one that really worries me the most is around informal settlements. And this for me, I don't understand. I mean, most of our informal settlements are in the metros. And the USDG, which is supposed to assist with regard to informal settlement upgrades, because the NAT program does not, will never go to the extent of achieving high numbers insofar as informal settlement upgrade. And I think we are not particular in terms of how the metros should spend the USDG. So for me, I would say that given the numbers that we see in front of us, 2016-17 actually should be a year that we focus extensively on informal settlement upgrades. Because if you see where we are now, if you just take the last two financial years, you see the deficit. We are actually creating a backlog that by the end of the MTSF period, we will look back and say, we did not achieve what we set out to achieve. And whilst billions and billions have been pumped into USDG. Because you might recall DG, one, at the time maybe we were still at DG. There was one presentation, I remember it was Chane, and they spent money on symmetry upgrades and whatever. And I raised that matter. Because what you end up seeing in the metros is that the money goes to, they call it, all right, we do bulk infrastructure. But where the bulk is actually happening, if it does not result in an informal settlement being upgraded, we should question that. I mean, you just look at the report and you see where the money has been spent in the electrification, in roads, in refuse removal, and all those things. Very little of it actually happens in informal settlements. So metros take this money and they see it as a supplement to their revenue that they'll generate through rates and taxes. And then they use it, you know, if you look at the budget of metros, you find that the USDG money is just spent throughout all the 10, 11 portfolios in the department, with the least in some cases going to human settlements or housing, as they might call it in that level. So I think the informal settlements should be a big focus for us. If we can't next year, sitting here, say we have achieved, because achieving 100% for this financial year will still be a loss, because it means the backlog of 2015-16 is still there. So what we should actually be looking at doing is to aim at around 120-130% of this year's target, so that we are able to eradicate the backlog that's there. And just the one that DG, I agree, and I've actually been lobbying for this several times. Every time social housing comes or the other department comes, is that we still haven't moved in our definition of what a poor person is. The upper limits of our incumbents to benefit on some of these subsidies. It's still very much, some of them are as far back. I don't know when last did we actually update the PNG upper limit. Because in today's rand and cents, 3,500 of 1996, this year might actually be, given how much has happened, it might actually be less than 1,200. So I will second that proposal that we review not only on the social housing aspect for the CREOs, but I think we need to go to overhaul the entire qualifying criteria of the subsidies that we offer. offer our people. And then finally, Chair, is the monies that were not spent, I think it's the 500 million that was not spent by the provinces. I just want to check whether there are indications from the various provinces whether the money has been returned, whether the money has been carried over. What's the status of that 500 million? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Gan. Honorable Chauke.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I was going through the annual report, Chair, and I pick up that there's a report of the portfolio committee in the annual report, Chair, that reflects the engagement between the department and the committee. And that report for me is a very, very important report. That as we do our oversight in the annual report, we should reflect much, I think, on that report, on the issues that we have raised, especially the questions that we now bring forward. One, Chair, I just want to come back to one or two areas. The Amnesty International report on the mining house called Lonmin, which employed over 1,000 workforce in the country, which this department, in fact, at some point had a relationship with in the Marikana intervention. I would definitely love to hear the new approach that the DGS talking about, especially on the mining towns, which I'll then suggest, Chair, as part of the engagement here, which we are going to be able to assist the department in the way forward rather than posing questions, but suggest things that can help the department in resolving some of the issues. I'll differ. Not because I differ politically with Ghana on this issue. This department has done a lot. The issue that we must do would be how do we collaborate the provincial reports, the provincial annual reports, vis-à-vis this report that we're doing here. Because that you are then able to measure challenges, capacity, and all of that. Because the current report deals with steps, does not give you exactly what are the issues on the ground. There must be a way in which we find a way to deal with the final outcome of the provincial level. The provinces, bulk of the money that gets transferred to provinces, I'll take it that, in fact, program 4 is the key program that our focus is supposed to be at. And I think that we need to build that relationship, Chair, of how do we synchronize these reports of provinces so that we can then measure the impact of the thing. So as I was coming back to the issue of the Dublin and the mining tower, I think there's a need, Chair, from this committee to, as the department has confirmed, that they would love to make a presentation, invite them and my Chamber of Mines on the issue of human settlement for mining tower. We invite them to have a presentation on what is the direct policy shift now? Previously, the department is providing housing for mine workers who are employed. We now say we're no longer going to do that. It means that there's a policy shift. So that presentation is very important for the committee to have a full understanding and to give support. Hence, the department spoke about the Royal Bafokeng project, which I know is in my area. It's one of the best models that we definitely would love to have a situation that the department comes and presents that particular model, and as they say that it's a model that we like to spread it all over the country in mining towns. Now, Chair, the issue of metros, definitely politically that's where the problems are. The pressure that currently government has is in metros. And we are not delivering the interest. As this question. Do we want to insist that moving forward, DG, we still maintain the status quo of pumping money not spent to get it back again for the next 5, 6, 7 years? I think there's a need that in your policy review process now. We then look at capacity, not only capacity, the role of the department intervening at the level that metros cannot perform. I mean, there is the Western Cape and the Golden. Western Cape, for example, again, look, it's one of the most, in fact, this is trivial. It's trivial. Yes, but you have so much money. No, Ghana, you have so much money. No, you have so much money that gets allocated to deal with eradication of squatter camp, create, which is now is revolutionary, create a better living condition for people. And that money is not spent to return back because we don't have capacity anymore. In other areas, it's deliberate that you're not spending this money because the interest is not there. So I'm saying that in your policy review approach, there's a need maybe that you look at the levels of intervention that the department will have power to intervene and to direct and to assist to implement projects in that particular area. If you look at it like that, both constituencies, I mean, in the Western Cape, same applies. Maybe the ruling party in the Western Cape as a province. They'll still suffer, same problem. People are going to be marching and doing all of this. I'm saying that there's a need, in fact, as your review policy to do that particular exercise. Because we are going, it's a lot of money, which is almost 43% of the allocation that goes to that level. It's quite a lot of money. So you may want to come and sort of in your legislation so that it's legislated, it's not something that you can decide in the favor of what. It's legislated that we assume in some quarters a national state that we intervene and deliver a service. So check. These are just my small issues. The last one, obvious, is that when I look at the category of leave and absenteeism in your department, I see that the high skilled management at the level of that level 13 and 14, the numbers are very high there. I'm not sure what is the problem with the stress level. Most of them seems to be having serious stress levels. When it comes to capacity building in categories based on demography, I see that in the Indian category, there's no training from the females, nothing capacity building from the maid, nothing capacity. We have Indians who are employed in the department and they don't have capacity because I see that they're 0-0. It seems that either we don't have them or if we have them, they're highly skilled. Maybe they clarify that part. Mr. Fagu, the internal audit, I hope he's here. If he's not here, it's a mistake, Chair.
Is that Mr. Fagu?
Oh. Yes. It's a mistake that we come to the annual report without that present. Because when you deal with issues of controls in between the annual report, that office becomes a very critical office. So it's important that when you deal with a report like this, that person is present in the meeting so that we can then engage and look at, because we're dealing with recurring issues here. You know, and that a internal audit committee becomes a key committee that assists in fact in resolving some of these issues as we move forward. So yeah, my last point of your chair is that yes, I agree with the contact members that we applaud you.
Honorable
members, yes. We applaud it, but not 100% applaud, by the way. Because if you can master the issue of metros and resolve those issues. And Ghana is correct that eradication of squatter camp becomes very key. And if we cannot resolve those issues, Chair, we'll give 50% to the department. You know, if you give them 100%, it's like what Honorable Ghana is raising is not there.
So I'm saying that let's reduce the percentage, Comrade Humphrey, and come back to say that the department must convince us moving forward how you're going to deal with metros. If that can happen, Chair, I think we'll be satisfied that the department is now moving forward in the right direction. Thanks,
Honorable Chair. This is not a caucus, Honorable Chair of the ANC. This is a portfolio committee of parliament. We call people honorables, not communists.
My apologies, Honorable, I'm feeling.
Thank you very much, Honorable members. I think I must start by appreciating what DG said when he said at least there is with outcome 8 and 9, there's a working relationship, working very closely, because I think it speaks directly to what members have been holding around the issue of informal settlements. Because if you have human settlement and cops are working together on some problems, I think that also says even us at some point we would need to have a joint portfolio committee to this court so that we are able to understand and deal with this, so that the numbers are the same as deposit. And also appreciate the fact that there is that proposal of trying to review those income bands, because I think it will really resolve a lot of issues. I think the emphasis has been raised around Program 3, and I just want to raise it again that even though the explanation on the underperformance of Program 3 is around the youth brigade and the UN habitants, the point we are trying to make here is that even without the youth brigade and the UN habitants, this program has been underperforming. And it's been underperforming for 3 years now. And one of the key areas of that program, which is supposed to be dealing with informal settlement, and which then means that if then in this financial year it is underperforming because of these two things, it means that other 2 years it has been underperforming only because of last, which is dealing with informal settlement, and therefore, which says in essence, all that has been raised by members here is a serious concern that around this issue of informal settlement, we need to tighten up. I know that there's been a workshop that you've had. Maybe at some point we need to hear the outcome of that workshop and recommendations that have come out in trying to deal with this issue of the informal settlement and how we are going to improve on it. On the issue of the USDG grant, I think other members have touched on this issue. The only thing that we would want to understand is that probably the money that has not been spent in Ekuru Lane and the city of Cape Town, I think it has been asked probably in a different form. Has it been rolled over, or has the treasury taken this money away? Probably that's the question we would want to understand. And you know, when we started in this department, in this portfolio committee, in the beginning, when we were talking about DFIs, there was also an issue of CEVCON to maybe the National Housing Fund that was supposed to be closed. Maybe we need to understand, was that finally closed? When, as there is so much progress around the issue of the DFIs, can we also understand what happened to CEVCON, to maybe the National Housing Fund? Has those books now finally been closed? Or what is happening? Well, the issue of the capacity grant, also the AG has raised this issue, we and everybody else have raised. We know now that even when you came to us in the first year, you did say that this is a short-term plan. You were knowing that the capacity grant is going to be closed off at some point. But what also is the big problem for us here is that this money, this grant did not seem to have yielded anything. Absolutely rich around this. There doesn't seem to have been probably a thought around how this grant was supposed to function. And maybe whilst we are talking about ring fencing the HSDG and the USDG on this, do we have now plans in place to say you are not going to see failure in the same way that the capacity grant has failed. Because it doesn't help that we are closing it off and then we are ring-fencing a certain amount. What is it that we want to achieve? Have we put systems in place? I think for me that's the most important thing, so that we have to understand. Colleagues have raised the issue of the HS report and the unqualified and the unqualified report that you've got with all those three emphases, which have seems to be the same thing happening. And I think they have stressed the point that I think honorable members have put it very nicely when he is saying you are slow learners. Because how do you have the same things being repeated over and over and over again? What are the problems? What are the challenges? So that we then understand that do you think these things are doable? We understand the action plans that you have. But action plans, we're going to come back again in the next financial year and we find the same thing. Do we now know that with all this, we are not going to find the same three emphases in the next financial year? And probably lastly, just for interest sake, you know, the DPME, when they look at your performances, there's four KPAs that they look at. But for me, there's one important one, which is human resource management. And under human resource management, obviously you have not performed well in three of those. You have performed well in one. But on human resource management, there's one critical area that you are not meeting your targets on people with disabilities. You are not meeting targets on people with disabilities. Can you understand what are the challenges there? Because that's one of the big areas that is making you not meet that whole KPA there, because you are not meeting your target on the people with disabilities, which is one of the key areas as this government that has said women, youth, and people with disabilities. So maybe as you respond to these questions, it would be nice to hear what are the challenges.
My colleagues will assist me in dealing with some of the questions. The first question from Honorable Ngaka Kabashi, I think there were a number of questions, but the first one is about Program 3. I think Program 3 is a thread that runs through all the questions that we've raised. If you look at Program 3, this year we can assure you that Program 3 has turned the corner, especially in us in particular. Because we speak, we're sitting at 58% of experienced shelters. We've never been here before. We've never reached 58% middle. Now, the two things that we need to separate, they're related, but for the purpose of answering the questions directly, we're going to separate them. NASP is about the professional aspect of our work. It is about getting the engineers, getting the project managers, getting the town planners to package the projects. And once the projects have been packaged, informal settlement projects have been packaged, then those projects must find their way into the IDP of a municipality. And once they are in the IDP of a municipality, then it can be registered as a capital project for informal settlements agreement. I thought, let me explain that part. Because NASP's role in every work that we do is about packaging an informal settlements project and then hand it to a municipality for a municipality to register it in its IDP. Once it's in the IDP, USDG kicks in, because it's now becoming a capital project. Now, if what we have seen is poor performance of NASP on the professional side and poor performance of USDG on the capital side, as much as we have packaged, we have been to almost every one of the 90 municipalities, the top 90 municipalities, We started with 50, 51 municipalities. We've covered almost every informal settlement in this country, especially in the metros. You take Rustenburg as an example. They have 11 informal settlements. We have managed to package 11 settlements upgrading plans in Rustenburg. But it's for now Rustenburg municipality to register that, both Rustenburg and the province, to register those upgrading plans as capital projects for the actual upgrading. But I also need to stress, Chair, that there are few informal settlements in this country that do not have services. The key issue is the level of service. In some cases, you'll find that there is one toilet, sanitation toilet point, servicing 25 households. In some cases, it's 1:5. In other cases, it's 1:30. And that toilet or that sanitation point will not hold for too long if it's servicing 25 households. So the intention is to upgrade that particular informal settlement so that we get into 1:1. Now, upgrading informal settlements, yes, we understand it takes time, but that should not be an excuse. I think there is a correlation between poor performance of USDG and the upgrading of informal settlements. In the workshop we had in George, we looked at all the informal settlements upgrading targets for provinces. We realized that the provinces are doing very well in terms of meeting their targets for informal settlements upgrading. But the metros are not doing very well in terms of meeting their informal settlements upgrading targets. And again, the two metros are a good example. If you look at the two metros, the city of Cape Town and Ekurhuleni, combined, they have been underspending by more than 350 million rands per annum. And that 350 million rands is an amount that should be assisted to upgrade the informal settlements. If you don't spend your informal settlement, your USDG grant, it affects performance on informal settlements upgrading because 50% of the USDG is earmarked for informal settlements upgrading. So, in a way, poor performance on USDG affects performance on informal settlements upgrading, if I may put it that way. But the program three, so far as it affects us as a national department, because we have full control of NASP. We can't come with any excuse for that. We have to account fully and say this program hasn't performed for 3 years. But we put measures in place. We had professional resource teams. We picked up that part of the problem, when we had this pool of professionals, engineers, town planners, we created it immediately in 2014, so that we don't have to go out on tender every year when we have to appoint engineering professionals or town planners. We do it, it shortens the turnaround time. But what we picked up is that our supply chain management process was never geared to do this kind of work. It was only geared to buy all the disposable in the back office. So now all of a sudden, the supply chain officials, they're finding it difficult to run that process and conclude it within a month. Even though we have a panel, but it took us almost 3 months to conclude, to start and conclude the process. And it defeats the purpose. What's the point of having a panel if you're going to take forever to appoint the professionals? But this year, we have turned the corner. I can assure you that we will spend all of that NASP budget. We have managed to bring in three expertise, and these are people who used to work in the industry and who understand the business of informal settlements upgrading. There was a question about the 30-day payment. Yes, it's not enough to give warnings. I think we're going to have to make sure that heads do roll where people have erred. This is not simply a finance exercise. It is a project management exercise. Contract management is a project management exercise. The people who should be managing the payment of contractors are the people who are managing the projects. The people who are managing the contracts themselves. So it is not the CFO's problem. It is a line function problem. And we've picked it up that in the past, the tradition in the organization has always been that anything that has to do with payment, we leave it to the CFO. Now we've changed that model because we want to hold line function managers accountable if 30-day payment has not been adhered
Now, this is not about the contractors who are doing the work. We deal with that one differently. This is about those who are appointed directly to the department, some of the professionals who are doing the work for us. This is what it's all about. Early this year, a minister called a meeting with all the contractors, those who are involved in housing constructors, construction. She called the meeting for all the contractors who have been affected and who have not been paid within 30 days. And we have picked it up that there are two provinces that have not been doing well in terms of paying contractors on time, and that is Eastern Cape and Free State. We have put more emphasis, in fact, we'll be spending more time on the Free State and Eastern Cape and trying to make sure that they do pay contractors on time. Limpopo and Gauteng, they have not been doing better, but we have noted that with Gauteng, the challenge was the reallocation of the budget last year. Remember, we moved an amount of about 1.2 billion out of Gauteng because of poor performance last year. So we, when it comes to the 30-day period, we are monitoring and watching provinces very closely. But at the same time, we need to watch ourselves and we need to take actions where the 30-day period has not been adhered to. There was a question about internal audit department and the action plan. We do have a working internal audit department. My colleague sitting right behind me is heading that internal audit component, Abel Mashabani. He's in charge of that component. They are administering and holding branch heads accountable where the action items have not been implemented. And we monitor it monthly. What the AG has raised with us is that with all of these financial issues, especially the financial statements, the message that AG has been communicating to all of us is that you have to master it monthly in order for you to perfect it annually. So which basically means that we need to open and close our books on a monthly basis. But the challenge is that it's been extremely difficult for the department, our component, because of the low level of capacity to do that. But we do have internal audit action plans, and we can share that with you. We've got it in here with us. We presented those two slides and submitted them to you before the AG briefed you. I'm going to defend my colleague right at the back that she didn't brief us. All the issues that they have raised with you, Chair, the PME, the AG, the FFC, they've raised all of those issues with us throughout the year, and we've discussed them with the team there. We were a little bit worried about one part with the AG, but we have managed to resolve it amongst ourselves. That they came back to us very late on the performance audit, and they didn't give us enough time to respond. Unlike all the other matters, we accepted our fate, but on the performance information, I don't think we had enough time to engage with the AG. They came back to us, especially what is called the predetermined objectives. So we said to them that it would help us a great deal to give us a little bit of time so that we're able to respond. But we're not making excuses. We accept the outcome, the audit outcome. Without wasting time, Chair, on the capacity building grant, Chair, I think you've answered that question in your comment, Honorable Carter. That question about the performance on the capacity building grant. This grant has been with the metros for the last 3 years, and they have failed dismally to spend. Now, in our engagements with Treasury, we've always told Treasury that sometimes, because I need to say this, that right from the word go, that we didn't really support it, the creation of another capacity building grant. But this was an issue that was pushed aggressively by Treasury. But once a decision was taken, we supported it. Because this is tantamount to throwing the money to the problem and hope that the problem is going to go away. Because it doesn't help to deal with capacity building by throwing money into that particular problem. If you look at how we have managed to turn things around in Nelson Mandela Bay Metro, especially where it matters the most, at an implementation level, it meant that National Department of Human Settlements, with all its entities, the province, and the municipality, they came together and they agreed on what needs to be done. And we try to share the capacity that we have as the three spheres of government to build that capacity. Even if we move out of Nelson Mandela Bay Metro a year or two from now, we will leave a lasting capacity. We will have capacitated, then we will have put standard operating procedures in place, and they will be able to run those programs themselves. I think that's what makes sense. If you look at all the capacity building grants countrywide, we are in excess of more than 4 billion rands going into capacity building. But we keep talking about capacity every year. But we can't come back and say, here is capacity, now we have done enough capacity. I've raised this issue with the DG of Treasury and the DDG managing, and I've made it very clear that we need to adopt a different approach when it comes to capacity building. Because capacity building, the way we're doing it now, is throwing money into the problem, hoping that the problem is going to go away. So that's why it's not performing. But we then took a decision that the 3%, which is upscale of the USDG, metros can use that, but we want it to be in the plans, just like provinces. If you look at the provincial business plans, you have upscale. We ask a question, what is it going to buy? Then they will put it there, and then it's very clear. So we're taking a different approach when it comes to capacity building. We're not necessarily taking the money away. All what we're doing, we're saying, let's put it as part of the USDG, the 3% USDG, so that they can submit the business plans in advance. The question on the CRU, Honorable Stoller, that is a very relevant question, and I agree with you fully that we have to go ahead with the program. We can't discontinue CRU. Yes, it is an expensive program, but part of the problem why it is expensive, it is because we have not standardized it properly. If you look at the cost per unit, it's fluctuating depending on where you're building that CRU unit. In some cases, it's 250,000. In other instances, it's 350,000. There are instances where it has gone up to about 500,000. I think we need to standardize it so that it suits the needs of those people that we're targeting. We can't do away with it. We will continue to redevelop hostels. The program has not moved fast as we wanted it to be. In fact, the bigger part of the problem when it comes to hostel redevelopment is the social facilitation aspect of it. And again, I agree with you. Maybe if we need assistance in that regard, we'll be able to come back to you. We've seen it in Gauteng. If you look at Gauteng as an example, there are hostels that have been vacant for a very long time. And part of the problem is beneficiary administration and social facilitation, which the MEC is managing, very hands-on. MEC and the MMC in Johannesburg has visited a number of those hostels. He has had a number of engagements with the beneficiaries, but it's very slow, because in some cases you have people who don't qualify. Then it would mean that we must go and do the right sizing, find an RDP house somewhere, sorry, a BNG house somewhere, to accommodate those people who don't qualify for the CRU, because with CRUs, you still have to pay. Even if you pay 50 rands or you pay 100 rands, it means you have to pay because we have to maintain it over time. There was a question on the mining towns. Yes, we can come and present here the two case studies that we are busy with right now. It's Northam with Engloplat, it's Royal Bafokeng in Rustenburg. Those two models, we've looked at them. We are of the view that most mining companies that are operating in South Africa, they are building five-star houses in other countries. And there is no reason why they cannot do the same here in South Africa. The Portfolio Committee on Public Administration and Monitoring and Evaluation, they visited a number of mining towns in Australia. And they were very impressed with how mine workers in Australia are accommodated. And we think that can be done here as well. The Royal Bafokeng model is a practical model. It's a very doable model. And you can see that what they have done, they have recapitalized the financial resources by 250 million rands, which then makes it possible to build houses, home ownership, not rental stock, for the 4,000 plus workers who are working for Royal Bafokeng. Lonmini has about 24,000 workers. 6,000 of those workers are staying in mining towns, sorry, in hostels, the hostels that the loan has provided themselves. We feel and we think that London can adopt exactly the same model that Welba Fugeni has come up with, because they do have the volumes, number one. Number two, they do have the funding to recapitalize their own financial resources entity that will take care of the financing of the mine workers. And they can renegotiate the living out allowance with the mine workers themselves, which is what Welba Fugeni has done. So it is doable, Chair, it is practical, and I would request that we come back here and make that presentation to you. Tomorrow we will be making that presentation to the IMC on mining towns. Title deeds, my colleague can respond to that question. It's, I think we started very slow. Maybe at some point we will have to agree that we have been slow learners on this one. Chair, we didn't move as fast as we thought things would move. Part of the problem is that we didn't ring-fence the budget immediately. Maybe if we have ring-fenced this budget in 2013, we would have managed to push that graph up by now. The budget was only ring-fenced last year, which was the second year of this term of government. But I can show you some provinces are doing well. For instance, Northern Cape is doing very well. We're very impressed with how Northern Cape is managing this, ironically, because Northern Cape is not doing well in other areas. But on title deeds, they're doing very well. There is a proper structure on title deeds in this province. In Western Cape, they have a proper structure in place. This morning, I got a call from one of the managers who is managing this program, complaining about the cost per title deed that the deeds office is charging us. He is of the view that 450 rands per title deed restriction is very high. So I've asked my colleague to attend to that. In managing the title deeds program, there are too many chains. There's a municipal chain, there's a deeds office chain, then there is a planning chain. So you have to manage that entire chain upfront so that you don't create bottlenecks, because those title deeds that have not been cleared by municipalities, you may find that there is a massive debt that the owners owe to municipalities. And municipalities are not going to give us a clearance certificate for those title deeds. It means that we must go back to municipalities, convince municipalities to write off that debt. Because if they don't write off the debt, then we won't be able to issue the title deeds. So the process is very complicated, but we are of the view that we will manage it. But we also want to recommend in the next financial year that we use a portion of the USDG to expedite the clearance of the title deeds. There was a question about the hostel in Kwamashu. I don't know if my colleague Ugwandi. Near Umlazi, the Cleveland hostel. And I'll ask Neville to respond to that question. There was a question about electrification as well, and you will answer that question. I've answered the question about the mining towns. The catalytic projects, Iklingape, I think that's the question that Honorable Kata is asking. Where is it stuck? As late as yesterday, we had a meeting with the CEO of HDA. We have a target, by the way, that we need to sign 21 implementation protocols on the title deeds by the 30th of catalytic projects. But we need to sign implementation protocols on those 21 catalytic projects. And that has to happen before the 30th. As we speak, we have 101 catalytic projects that we have assessed and we've recommended for them to minister to be classified as catalytic projects. The target for this term of government is 50. We need to assess and implement 50. Per annum, we took a decision that we will implement 10 per annum. In the last financial year, there's 10 that is already running. We can give you that list. In fact, there's more than 10. At the last time I checked, there was 26 catalytic projects where you have a developer or a contractor on site. But a catalytic project has to meet the definition, because these are projects that will help us to catalyze economic integration. They will help us to catalyze spatial integration, given the history that we come from in most of our cities. The catalytic projects will help us to catalyze social integration, integrate our communities, because right now you still have separate development, you still have segregation in this physical. So what these catalytic projects will do, they will help us to transform our cities. The majority of them are in the cities. There are those that are in secondary towns, like Rustenburg and Northam. So they will help us to achieve that. We think that the 101 do meet the criteria, but there's also a budgeting exercise because we can't implement all of them at a time. So we will be able to come back to you and give you a list of that 101. We can categorize them, those that are at a planning stage, those that are being implemented. For instance, Savannah City is at a construction stage right now as we speak. This is a 2.7 billion rand project, which is a partnership between government and Basel REIT, which is a developer. There are also funders there, DBSA, Old Mutual, and other government DFIs. So there are catalytic projects that are running, Colombia being one of them, but we're packaging it differently so that it does help us to achieve all these integration targets that we want to achieve. So we can come back and give you a list of all that 101 catalytic projects. We can give you the 21 as well that we think it's ready. We call it the platinum catalytic projects. The ones that are ready, we call them platinum because they're ready. They're ready for implementation and some of them are being implemented. So we do have a list. There is nothing, there is no problem there. But the only challenge, and this one we need to manage it carefully, Chair, this is my parting shot for the catalytic projects, and I'll ask my colleagues to come in. When we deal with private sector developers, remember we went out and we asked private sector developers to submit projects that will help us to achieve these three objectives. Now, as we contract with them, we need to find out how much revenue are they raising themselves, who are their funders, what is it that government must contribute into those projects, what is an acceptable return on investment for those projects by the developers themselves, because we don't want to subsidize people only to find that they're taking 40% or even 50% of return on investment. All of those negotiations and discussions are very delicate discussions that sometimes can make or break this problem. So the HDA team has been working and negotiating with all of those developers so that we can agree on what is an acceptable funding for this project from government, what is an acceptable return on investment. Remember, these developers, these are private people, these are business people, so they have to make profit, but how much of that profit? We need to know. Because if profit is 40% return on investment, that is not acceptable. We must find what is an acceptable return on investment on those projects. So we're busy now with financial appraisal. We're busy now with implementation protocol, and I'm sure Natemuloyi will be able to come here and present all of those projects. I spend almost every day with him discussing catalytic projects. If there's one entity that I spend more time on, it is the HDA entity. Minister also has been very impatient with us. In fact, she made it very clear to us that once that program is concluded, it must be squeaky clean, because there's a lot of money that we're talking about here. The value of all these catalytic projects combined is in excess of more than 300 billion rand. So we have to make sure that the process is squeaky clean. There was a question about SRA expenditure in the last financial year, and I'm sure the CFO can respond to that. I think it's a very simple question. But this year, we've seen that SRA has stabilized. The board is meeting regularly. They have a very strong CEO who's been in the industry for some time. And all what they are waiting for is for us to change the quantum from 125,000, if Minister agrees. Minister wanted to be convinced that we are not subsidizing private developers here. But we explained it to Minister that the subsidy quantum has not changed since 2008. So we can move from 125,000 to 150,000. Once that is done, we'll have a number of viable projects. Also, the income bands, we have changed the income bands up to 15,000. The other income band on the PNG, I think we can have a discussion on that one. We've had a lot of discussions with Dr. Sokoko, the head of policy in the department, who is driving the white paper on human settlements. Because remember, when the housing program was introduced, the policy was about targeting the indigent. It wasn't about targeting 3,500. If you remember, at some point, there was a threshold in terms of income, which explains who the indigent is. And it was linked to social development. And I think it's also in line with the policy of the ruling party. I think we have deviated slightly from what was meant to be the policy intent to something that was not intended. Because if you keep pushing that upper band for BNG, you may have a program that is not sustainable. Because you're no longer targeting the indigent. You're no longer targeting people who cannot build houses for themselves, because the indigent are those people who will not be in a position to build for houses for themselves. And the fiscals may not be able to afford that over time. So we're going to have to start thinking carefully about how we define the indigent. You've heard the minister in a number of public platforms talking about 40-year-olds, because she's of the view that the majority of 40-year-olds today are people who can still take care of themselves, except the disabled. But also we need to prioritize the elderly people. We did a quick scan the other day on people who are getting old age pension who don't have houses, because we wanted to target that space as well. But I'm just saying this, that maybe, Chair, we must, if I put it in Zulu, hambanganane on that one, on the BNG, pushing up the threshold, because it may not be sustainable in the long run, and the fiscals may not afford it. But we're open to discussions. In the team, the Human Settlements White Paper team, they have been debating this issue for some time. They had a round table on this matter. I think even Treasury is very nervous about pushing the threshold. FLISP has not been performing for the last 2 years. Now, we're going to run into trouble with provinces on this one. Because we are of the view that if provinces are not prioritizing FLISP, maybe we have to centralize it. We have written to Treasury and made a recommendation that FLISP has to be managed as a national program. And this will make it possible for us to deal directly with the developers, to deal directly with the bankers, sorry, with the funders. We've made that recommendation for the next financial year and asked NHFC to manage it. But if NHFC is going to manage it, because they have been managing it before, but they have complained about the operational fund aspect of it. So we worked with Treasury, we presented this to provinces, and some provinces are not comfortable with it. I'm aware that Gauteng is not very happy with the approach that we are taking. The Western Cape also is not very comfortable. But we spent some time debating this. Other provinces, they're comfortable with the model that we're taking, because most provincial departments were never designed to deal with this kind of a program. This program, it means that you must spend more time working with developers, spend more time working with banks, spend more time working with other funders. But most provincial departments were not designed to deal with this kind of a function, which is why we want to centralize it and get our DFI to manage it. Chair, consequence management has to be implemented. This is the last shot. It has to be implemented. I think we have implemented consequence management in some cases, but maybe not to the extent that you want us to do it. Where there's no consequence management, performance goes out of the window, because people know that if I don't perform, nothing is going to happen to me. So we've started it this year. In fact, in the morning, when you were deliberating here, I was doing performance reviews for the DDGs. But we do it twice a year. We do it 6 monthly, because the program allows us to do it twicely. But also we do first the review of the branches, because you can't have a branch that is not performing, and then you have a branch head who is doing very well. Mm-hmm. The two have to talk to each other. That's why we do branches first, and then do the branch heads later, because the two have to be in sync. Without wasting time, Chair, I'm going to... Oh, the other point that was raised is the gas. I think we can discuss this some other time. The government employment housing scheme, which is targeting your nurses, your teachers. I think you raised this point, that if we don't take care of that middle class, that gap housing market, we may run into trouble. I am of the view that once DPSC and Human Settlements have finalized the government employment housing scheme, we're going to see the numbers of people who own houses, government employees, your teachers, your nurses, all the people who are working for government. That number is going to go up. There is a significant amount of money that PIC has made available for this kind of a program. I think it's an amount of about 11 billion rands. if I'm correct, but my colleagues can correct me. They've put that amount aside. We have already pre-screened more than 300,000 government employees. And if we can run this program, we will exceed our five-year targets, our gap housing targets in this term of government. But GPSA, human settlements, and national treasury, they have been mandated by cabinet to come up with a joint presentation on how we are going to roll out that program. We're managing it with PIC, SA Home Loans, and other stakeholders. Thank you, Chair. I'll ask my colleagues to pick and choose some of the questions that were raised, but others were recommendations.
Thanks, Chair. Members. Chair, just on the CRU, I mean, I think it's just important to note that across the subsidy, there's a disability allowance, so a variation, which allows for, in any instance where they, as part of a project, if they are persons with disabilities, that there's a variation over and above the variations that exist. One of the concerns we've had, which we've raised with particularly on the CRU, is that provinces and municipalities have this one-size-fits-all. So they don't do the socioeconomic analysis properly, they don't do the survey, and they don't know who they're responding to. And I think one of the things that we need to be clear about is it's allowed, and I think it's in all projects. So there's a couple of things there. So I think in relation to the question around the CRU, I mean, I'll have a look at it, and because there is accessibility variations allowed. And I don't think we must be flippant about it. If we're not catering to persons with disabilities, then it's something that we need to address. So I'll take up that one. On the issue around the overspending in Northern Cape on the rectification, Chair, one of the things that we need to be able to do is there's a number of legacy issues that we're picking up, and particularly in relation to the Northern Cape is around the issue around the asbestos. And that was drawn to our attention, and I think that's where some of the money is in relation to that. What we were concerned and what we're raising is that money must go towards the capital expenditure for those issues. Because I think one of the things that we need to understand is that sometimes as the Human Settlements Department, we're having to respond to everyone for everything else, because no one else is providing those support mechanisms. But I think it's just... Chair, then on the issue around the unspent monies, I think just around Ekurhuleni and the City of Cape Town, that's dependent on what happens in the medium-term budget review and that. You know, the issue that each municipality has to be able to justify its ability, that those monies are committed, that it's not dumping and those kind of things. On the issue around Servcon to Belisha, Chair, what we can indicate, for all intents and purposes, we're at the final stages of submitting the liquidation statements to the master, because we're closing down and those entities will no longer exist. But I think it was just a question of dotting the I's and crossing the T's in relation to transferring the assets. So for example, to Belisha, we've had to transfer the projects to the provinces. We've had to also transfer some of their monies that they had for projects into the provinces. And in the case of Servcon, there were land parcels that we had to transfer to the provinces, which were there. That's been done. In relation to the National Housing Fund, that's been incorporated into the provinces, and the CFO has got some update on where we are on that issue. Thanks.
Just to conclude on the issue of the three entities, the National Housing Fund, I think it's awaiting the finalization of the right paper, simply because we cannot disestablish it as an entity until the right paper has been prepared, or the Housing Code or the Housing Act has been prepared. But I think it's better to indicate that the fund has been listed, or rather delisted, from the PFMA Section 3A entity. So we don't have those funds anymore, but they are being disclosed in the annual financial statements because they've not been disestablished to date. But I think the COO has responded to the overspending of the Northern Cape, and I think the member is comfortable with that. But I think it's also compatible for us to put comfort to Honorable Gara that the two metros that we projected that they would not spend the money by March, both of them did not spend, which is your Ekurhuleni, which underspent by the same 300 that we projected that we didn't spend. the city of Cape Town, we projected 150. The underspending to date is only 145. So we could have used that 145 for the project that where it's ended to be used between the province and the metro. Those projects were related to both the we're not taking money away from the city, but we were using it within the province itself. But we did transfer those monies to the both metros. But those metros, those amounts are subjected to the rollover. As the CEO has indicated, in terms of the commitment, they will have to justify as to whether those commitments are legit, and they will be able to spend the money as they will be receiving the rollover. It goes back to the question by Honorable Ghana that the 500 from the HSDG, the major and the material amount of the underspending relates to Limpopo, and that amount has been accrued as a rollover for Limpopo profit. But if you look at the amounts, Gauteng Tech did not request the rollover. They slipped the date, and we did indicate that in the material amount they could have used it because they lost the 1.2 billion to HDA as well as the provinces. But that money could not be requested as a rollover. From the Shire and the DJ, this indicate from the academic point and strategic to say they are on course in, as far as the pipeline project is concerned, but because at the time of the financial year 2015-16, there was no credible pipeline for them to can convince the national department to request the money, so we couldn't transfer the money on the basis of that. I indicated that even if they had requested that money, it would have been in their books, and they would have been subjected to Treasury providing them with the retention approval to that effect. But yeah, I think I must indicate that in as far as the AG matters is concerned, we take note and the advice from the committee, and then I think as an executive and DG has indicated, we take responsibility of all the material matter of emphasis raised by the AG, and seriously so, we have dealt with one already, which is the last. And the program 3, intention is not to have the research findings coming in this year, particularly. So we are gunning towards a clean audit. So we speak the language of the unqualified audit without any matter of emphasis. But we consider the points, we're working together with the internal audit under Tapelo. We're bringing in the AG during the year, not towards the end of the audit. And I think we have a good relationship with our audit committee, the public, as you indicated. So we should be in a position to can deal with all these issues. But the 30 days period is subjected also to the consequence management that you have indicated. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
There was one question about the employment equity challenge and disability. I wanted to ask my colleague to respond to it. Maybe we can leave the one about Indians for now.
Thank you, Chair. I was going to respond to about the Indians also. Regarding the disability figure of 8 being very low, we have a total staff complement of 649 staff, and the people with disability are only 8 in the department, which is a very low figure. But one of the reasons is that we have really slowed down on recruitment. With the budget cuts and the compensation budgets, we are not basically recruiting for the last 2 years. The recruitment has been very low. But what we have done to mitigate the circumstances, we have sent out a number of circulars by the Director General to say that if any staff members, management is recruiting, kindly give attention, special attention to people with disability during the recruitment process. But for the last 2 years, we basically have not done any big recruitment, and hence we do agree that the figures for disability are very low. Okay, the next one, about the Indians not going for on any training, we have 14 Indians in the department out of the staff complement of 649. And we find that most of the 14 Indians are in the categories of being technical and professional. If you look at it, they are in a higher category of employment, and maybe hence they didn't go on training. My last one is regarding the sick leave. So the question was raised is, We find very high sick leave amongst the senior management of the department, but here we find that the highest number of people who are taking sick leave is the assistant directors and the deputy directors. Then it's followed by, maybe the management is stressing them out. The next one being followed by is the secretaries and admin assistants. And then is followed by the cleaners and the security staff. And the last one is also quite high, is the senior management, which is chief directors, directors, and all of us. But it's actually last on the scale of high. But the highest numbers of people who are taking extraordinary sick leave is our assistant directors and deputy directors. Thank you.
Thank you very much, leadership from the department on that interaction and the response. Just to say, I know that Honorable Members raised the issue about contracts awarded to employees. Because that was not related to you. That was related to NHBRC action. That's an NHBRC action. And when we interact with them, issue is honest, because it has been raised by the AG, but the issue is that it's not for what it needs to be declared. And And so we invited NHBRC here not because we wanted them to present, but because that entity is also audited. So in case there are questions there. But so we're still going to interact with the entity when we interact with the entity later on. So thank you very much. On that note, I think we're done. Just to say to honorable members, we're meeting on Thursday. I have been lobbied that I must change the time of 2. I listened to members. So we are meeting at 11 on Thursday. 11 o'clock, the venue will be communicated because we still have time to look for a venue. Because we have booked a venue for 2. So we will communicate with the venue, but we are meeting at 11 to look at the report. Also, the second part is that. The third part, the delegation of the portfolio committee that is supposed to go to UN Habitat. I still don't know if we are going, but I will know tomorrow. I will let you know tomorrow. They are having serious challenges of accommodation. But we, you saw that I have released Kodisha to be out most of the time during this time because she's chasing the application. It's sitting, I think it should be done. So hopefully tomorrow we'll let you know, so that at least you know what you need to do. Whether you are going or not going. Whatever the decision, I'll let you know tomorrow. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.